The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we're jumping into a really foundational work, Thomas Kuhn's The Copernican Revolution. And this isn't just a history of astronomy lesson.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
It's much bigger than that. We're talking about how reality itself gets redefined. Kuhn uses the shift from an Earth-centered to a sun-centered universe as like the ultimate case study.
A case study in what he later famously called paradigm shifts.
Exactly. It's about how these huge scientific transformations happen. And spoiler alert, it's never just about piling up new facts. It's a messy, complete conceptual overthrow.
So our goal today is really to unpack that process. Why are these established worldviews, these paradigms, so incredibly resilient? You know, why do they resist change so strongly?
And how does a truly revolutionary idea actually manage to break through all that resistance? It's fascinating because Kuhn's insights here, they apply way beyond science.
Oh, absolutely. You see it in business, technology, even like personal beliefs. Understanding this gives you a kind of blueprint for how deeply entrenched ideas finally get overturned. It's basically the origin story of our modern scientific way of thinking.
It really is.
Okay, so let's talk about the author first. Thomas S. Kuhn. He lived from 1922 to 1996. And what's really key here, I think, is his background. He wasn't initially trained as a historian or philosopher.
Right. He actually got his PhD in theoretical physics from Harvard. That technical grounding is, well, it's crucial to his whole perspective.
How so? How did that physics training shape his view of history?
Well, the story goes that he was asked to teach a history of science course focusing on mechanics. And he kept hitting this wall trying to understand thinkers like Aristotle. Their physics seemed so fundamentally, well, wrong from our viewpoint.
Yeah, it's easy to fall into that trap, isn't it? Judging the past by what we know now.
Totally. But Kuhn had this breakthrough moment. He realized Aristotle wasn't doing bad physics. He was doing physics within a completely different conceptual framework, a different paradigm, operating under different rules and assumptions. It was internally consistent, just different.
Ah, so the task wasn't to point out their mistakes, but to understand the world as they saw it.
Precisely. And that's where his dual expertise really shines. He had the scientific rigor to understand the technical details, the math, but also the historical and philosophical depth to see the bigger picture, the cultural transformation.
He could appreciate why the old Ptolemaic system worked, mathematically speaking, while also grasping the immense implications of throwing it out.
Exactly. Which brings us right to the book itself, The Copernican Revolution. The core idea is that this shift from Ptolemy's Earth-centered model to Copernicus's sun-centered one wasn't a quick flip.
No, it was this long, messy, multi-generational struggle.
Right. And Kuhn argues it fundamentally reshaped not just astronomy, but the entire Western conception of reality, of humanity's place within the cosmos.
And a key point Kuhn makes, which I think is easy to miss, is just how good the old system was, the Ptolemaic model, the geocentric one. It wasn't some primitive superstition.
Absolutely not. It dominated for, what, 1,400 years? Because it was a sophisticated scientific achievement for its time, it worked.
It made predictions, right? Yeah. It could tell you where the planets would appear in the sky.
Yes, with pretty decent accuracy, actually. And it wasn't just astronomy. It was woven into Aristotelian physics, into Christian theology. Mm-hmm. It was this whole coherent intellectual ecosystem, a complete worldview.
So overturning it meant challenging not just astronomical calculations, but physics, philosophy, theology, everything.
Everything. Kuhn tracks this whole journey, showing how it required tackling technical puzzles, overcoming deep philosophical biases, and confronting powerful social and religious assumptions. It was a monumental task.
Okay, let's dig into the details a bit. You mentioned the coherence of the old world. It starts with the basic picture, right? The ancient two-sphere universe.
Yeah, Earth fixed at the center, unmoving. And then you have the celestial sphere, or spheres, rotating around us. Simple enough. But then you hit a snag.
The planets, they don't just move smoothly across the sky.
Exactly. They do this weird little dance. They seem to slow down, stop, move backward for a bit, then loop forward again. That's retrograde motion. Explaining that was the big challenge.
Especially if you believed philosophically that all celestial motion had to be perfect, uniform, and circular. How do you get that messy loop out of perfect circles?
And that's where Claudius Ptolemy comes in, around the 2nd century AD. His solution was ingenious, really. He used the system of epicycles and decrements.
Right. So the planet moves on a small circle, the epicycle.
And the center of that small circle moves along a larger circle, the decrement, which is centered on or near the Earth. Think of it like drawing circles in the air with a pen attached to a spinning wheel.
And by fiddling with the sizes and speeds of these circles, you could actually replicate that weird retrograde loop quite accurately.
You could. It preserved the ideal of circular motion, mostly, and it gave you predictive power. Kuhn stresses this. It was good science for its era. It solved the problems it needed to solve.
And later, this whole mechanical picture got deeply embedded into the medieval worldview, especially with thinkers like Thomas Aquinas.
Oh, completely. They synthesized it with Christian doctrine. You had Earth, the realm of imperfection and change, at the center. Then the celestial spheres, perfect and unchanging, leading up to God in the outermost sphere. It's a moral and spiritual map, too.
Okay, so if this system was so successful, so integrated, so stable for over 1,000 years, what started to go wrong? Where did the cracks appear?
Interestingly, Kuhn argues the initial crisis wasn't really about predictive failure. The system could still be tweaked to fit observations. The problem was, well, it started to feel messy, too complicated.
Too many tweaks.
Exactly. To keep the accuracy up, astronomers had to keep adding more epicycles, adjusting things. It became incredibly cumbersome. And crucially, they introduced mathematical devices like the equant.
The equant. That sounds technical, but it's important, right?
Very important. The equant was basically a fudge factor. It was an off-center point from which the epicycle center appeared to move at a constant angular speed. This helped with accuracy, but...
But it violated the core philosophical principle of uniform motion around the center of the circle.
Precisely. It worked mathematically, but it sacrificed the underlying elegance and harmony. The system was becoming aesthetically displeasing to some thinkers. A bit of kludge.
And that's the dissatisfaction that Kuhn says primarily motivated Copernicus. Not that Ptolemy was wrong, but that it wasn't beautiful enough.
That's a huge part of Kuhn's argument, yes. Copernicus was deeply influenced by Neoplatonic ideas about mathematical harmony and simplicity in the cosmos. He looked at the Ptolemaic system with all its fixes and thought, there has to be a cleaner way.
So he was kind of a conservative revolutionary, trying to restore an older, purer ideal.
In a way, yes. He wasn't trying to burn everything down initially. He just thought putting the sun at the center and having the Earth move would create a more elegant, more harmonious mathematical system.
But his initial system, it wasn't actually better at predicting things, was it?
Not really, no. Because Copernicus stubbornly clung to the idea of perfect circular orbits, too. So his model still needed its own complex system of epicycles. In some cases, it was even less accurate than the highly refined Ptolemaic system of the time.
And it created huge new problems, like the stellar parallax issue.
The killer argument against it, really. If the Earth is orbiting the sun, then as we move from one side of our orbit to the other, nearby stars should appear to shift their position against the background of more distant stars, like holding your finger up and looking at it first with one eye, then the other.
And nobody could see this shift.
Nobody. The stars seemed fixed. The logical conclusion, based on observation, was that the Earth wasn't moving. So resisting Copernicus wasn't just ignorance. It was often based on sound methodological reasoning at the time.
Okay, so Copernicus plants the seed, but it's flawed and faces huge objections. It kind of stalls for a while.
For decades, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was seen mostly as a mathematical curiosity. Maybe useful for calculations, but not a real description of the cosmos. It needed more work, more evidence.
Which required two key figures, right? One for the data, one for the theoretical breakthrough.
Exactly. First comes Tycho Brahe. He actually rejected Copernicus's heliocentric model, proposing his own hybrid system. But he was obsessed with accurate observation.
Built the best observatory of his time, pre-telescope.
Absolutely. He spent decades meticulously recording the positions of stars and planets with unprecedented precision. He created this amazing data set, the raw fuel the revolution desperately needed, even though he didn't accept the conclusion himself.
And that data fell into the hands of his assistant, Johannes Kepler.
Yes, and Kepler was a committed Copernican, also driven by that Neoplatonic desire for harmony. But unlike Copernicus, he wasn't willing to ignore Tycho's incredibly precise data when it didn't fit perfect circles.
Especially with Mars, right? The orbit just wouldn't fit a circle.
It wouldn't. After years of grueling calculations, Kepler finally had his breakthrough. He abandoned the 2,000-year-old dogma of circular motion. He realized planets move not in circles, but in ellipses, with the sun at one focus.
That was the massive conceptual leap, wasn't it?
It's huge. Suddenly, with ellipses, The heliocentric model became mathematically far simpler and significantly more accurate than the Ptolemaic system for the first time.
Okay, so Kepler fixes the math, but people still aren't seeing proof. That's where Galileo comes in.
Right. Galileo didn't invent the telescope, but he was one of the first to turn it to the heavens systematically. And what he saw was, well, revolutionary.
Things like the moons of Jupiter.
Exactly. He saw four points of light orbiting Jupiter. Clear proof that not everything in the universe revolved around the Earth. That shattered a core assumption of the old model.
And the phases of Venus.
That was another big one. He observed Venus showing phases just like our moon, which only makes sense if Venus orbits the sun inside Earth's orbit. It was direct observational evidence supporting the heliocentric arrangement.
Plus, seeing mountains on the moon, sunspots, it blurred that old Aristotelian line between the supposedly perfect, unchanging heavens and the imperfect, changing Earth.
Absolutely. Galileo provided the tangible observational blows that really started to crack the foundations of the old worldview.
But even with Kepler's elegant math and Galileo's stunning observations, there was still a huge piece missing, wasn't there? A coherent physics to explain it all.
The biggest piece, arguably. The old Aristotelian physics explained why things on Earth fall down and why things in the heavens circle around. But it couldn't explain why a massive Earth would be flying through space or what kept the planets in their elliptical paths.
If the Earth is moving, why aren't we all flung off? Why don't objects dropped fall behind? The old physics was completely broken by the new astronomy.
Exactly. You had this new map of the solar system, but no understanding of the forces governing it. That's the gap that needed filling.
Enter Sir Isaac Newton, the grand synthesizer.
The man who put it all together. Newton, with his law of universal gravitation, provided the missing physical mechanism. He proposed that the same force that makes an apple fall to the ground on Earth is the exact same force that holds the moon in orbit around the Earth and the planets in orbit around the sun.
Universal gravity. Not one set of laws for Earth and another for the heavens, but one set for everything.
Precisely. He unified terrestrial and celestial mechanics under a single, elegant mathematical framework. His laws of motion and gravity explained why planets move in ellipses, why the Earth could move without us flying off. It provided the coherent physical foundation the Copernican system had lacked for over a century.
So Newton basically completes the revolution. He establishes the new paradigm, a universe governed by universal, impersonal mathematical laws.
He really does. It's an amazing story of how data, mathematical innovation, observation, and finally a new physical theory all had to come together over 150 years.
So looking back at this whole epic struggle, what are the main themes Kuhn wants us to take away?
Well, first and foremost, I think, is the nature of scientific paradigms. He shows that scientific theories aren't just isolated hypotheses. They're embedded in these larger worldviews, these paradigms, that include assumptions about physics, methodology, even metaphysics and theology, like with Ptolemy.
So you can't just tweak one little part, like the center of the orbit, without shaking the whole structure.
Exactly. Changing a core element forces a reevaluation of everything connected to it. That's why paradigm shifts are so disruptive and meet such resistance.
And that point about aesthetics over accuracy, especially with Copernicus, is fascinating. That science isn't always driven purely by data contradicting theory.
Right. The drive for simplicity, elegance, mathematical harmony, these aesthetic or philosophical values can be incredibly powerful motivators, especially when an old paradigm starts to feel overly complex and, well, ugly, even if it still kind of works.
It challenges that simple textbook idea of science as just accumulating facts.
Definitely. And related to that is the idea that resistance is rational,
right?
Or at least understandable within the old framework.
Yeah, we touched on that with the parallax problem. People weren't just being stupid or stubborn for sticking with Ptolemy initially.
Not at all. The old system had a long track record of success. The new system was initially less accurate, raised serious observational objections, and lacked a coherent physics. Abandoning a proven model for that required a huge leap of faith, often based on those non-empirical factors like elegance. Kuhn really teaches us intellectual humility towards past thinkers.
And finally, maybe the most profound sign of the revolution's success wasn't just new answers, but new questions.
Absolutely. The whole framework shifted. Before Copernicus, a key question was, what combination of perfect circles can explain planetary motion? After Newton, that question became almost irrelevant. The new question was, what are the universal forces and laws governing motion everywhere? The paradigm defines what counts as a legitimate scientific problem.
Kuhn certainly had a way with words to capture these dynamics. You mentioned some key ideas earlier.
Yes, he really emphasizes the profound impact. He said the revolution was a transformation in man's conception of himself and his relation to the universe. It wasn't just about astronomy. It changed our sense of place.
And that point about respecting the past achievement, the Ptolemaic system was a sophisticated achievement that successfully solved most of the astronomical problems of its day. That humility is key.
It is. And to underscore the depth of the change, he described the geocentric universe as a whole way of life. And changing it required not merely new observations, but a new vision of man's place in creation. It was about rethinking everything.
Okay, so bringing this home. How does this story from centuries ago apply to us now? You mentioned organizational paradigm shifts.
Yeah, this is a classic application. Think about a big, successful company built on a certain technology or business model. That's their Ptolemaic system. Then a disruptive innovation comes along, maybe initially clunkier, less profitable by the old metrics.
The Copernican idea.
Right. The established company often resists it, dismisses it, because it doesn't fit their existing framework of value. It looks inferior according to the rules of their successful paradigm. They're making rational decisions within their worldview.
Until the new thing eventually improves and disrupts them completely, because they couldn't make that conceptual leap.
Exactly. Survival often requires recognizing when the whole game is changing, when you need a new paradigm, new metrics for success.
And what about on a more personal level, personal intellectual development?
I think Kuhn teaches us incredible intellectual humility. When we encounter beliefs that seem totally wrong to us, it helps to remember that intelligent people can hold those views rationally if they operate within a different, consistent framework.
It's not always about just showing them the facts.
Right. And for ourselves, if we feel stuck, maybe we're just adding epicycles, complex justifications to an old way of thinking that isn't working anymore. Real personal growth, like a paradigm shift, might require acknowledging that our current framework is failing and being open to a fundamentally new vision.
A new way of asking questions about our own lives.
Precisely.
So final thoughts. For me, what always stands out when I revisit Kuhn is just how non-linear scientific progress actually is. We like to think of it as the steady march, adding bricks of knowledge.
Yeah, the cumulative model.
Kuhn shows it's often these periods of like normal science within a paradigm, punctuated by these intense revolutionary periods where the whole foundation gets ripped out and replaced. It's much more disruptive.
It absolutely is. And the length of time it took 150 years for the Copernican Revolution to be fully realized with Newton is just staggering. It reminds us that the obvious truths we live with today are the result of these long, hard-fought conceptual battles.
So what's your final provocative thought for us?
Well, if the incredibly successful millennium-spanning Ptolemaic system was eventually overthrown because it became too complex, too inelegant, and a simpler, more harmonious vision emerged, what deeply embedded, obvious framework are we living inside today? In science, in society, in our own thinking, what complex system is just waiting for its own Copernican disruption? A radical simplification that will make our current common sense look like Ptolemy's epicycles to future generations.
That's definitely something to chew on. A great place to leave it. Thanks for this fascinating deep dive.
My pleasure. It's always illuminating to revisit Kuhn.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.